some artists are so on it, and they'll email me, and they'll be like, they email me, they send me breakdowns, they'll send me stats, they'll send me data, they'll tell me, you know what I'm saying? And I'm like they're on it. You gotta want it more than I do, right? Like I'm support. I'm not the main act. My name is not the one written. I'm not the primary artist. You are. My job is support. But if I want it more than you, it's not going to work.
This episode is brought to you by DistroKid. DistroKid is a distribution service that can get your music into all the DSPs like Spotify, Apple Music, TikTok, Tidal, Instagram. Over a million artists have used DistroKid. I'm one of those artists. I've used DistroKid to get my music out, distribute some of my songs. As you know, as I look into all of these distribution services, I test them out. And DistroKid is great. They offer a ton of features, annual fee, unlimited uploads, and you keep 100% of your royalties. Check out DistroKid.com. What's going on? Welcome to the New Music Business. I'm your host, Ari Herstand, author of How to Make It in the New Music Business, the book. Third edition is out now everywhere, all formats, hardcover, ebook, audiobook. You want to listen to it, you can find it where you find audiobooks or any book. It's on all bookstores. Check it out. Today, my guest is Moody Jones. He is currently the GM of dance at Empire. Empire is an independent distribution company and record label. They also have publishing division. They have sync and are everything. Empire has evolved a lot over the years. Previously, he was the SVP, Senior Vice President of Digital and Creative, working on campaigns with Yungblue, Busta Rhymes, XXXTentacion, Snoop Dogg, Aaliyah, bunch. But as the GM of dance now at Empire, they acquired Claude Von Stroke's Dirty Bird Records, which, if you remember, we had the Dirty Bird's label manager, Darren Delgado, on the show not too long ago. And so this is kind of the second episode that we dive into the dance music world. This is a side of the industry that I love learning about because I'm just not super involved in. And so it's really fun to have these conversations. And Moody dropped endless gems throughout this episode. And even if you're not in the dance music realm, I encourage you to listen to this because he's got a lot of wisdom. We talk a lot about just artistry and branding and marketing. And he even has, towards the end, a really interesting idea about how approaching streaming services, these DSPs, kind of as a social network and how that works. I think you're going to learn a lot from this. And yeah, I had a great time chatting with Moody Jones. You can find Moody Jones on Instagram and TikTok. Oh yeah, he's also an artist and he has great music. You can find his music on DSPs as well. He does remixes. And so, you know, he's fully in it, wearing many, many hats, the multi-hyphenate, as kind of we all are. So you can find him just at Moody Jones pretty much everywhere, Instagram, TikTok, the DSPs, all of that. You can find Empire on Instagram. That's just at Empire, and their website, of course. You can find all of us that make the show happen at Ari's Take on Instagram, TikTok, X, Threads, all of that. You can find me at Ari Herstand on Instagram. But real quick, visit aristake.com. Get on the email list. That's where you're going to get the most up-to-date information. We'll send you stuff about new episodes dropping and just info about the new music business to get on the email list. But right now, if you could just pause this episode, leave us a 5-star review on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and hit the subscribe, hit the follow button wherever you're listening to this. Leave us a comment on YouTube. If you're not listening on YouTube, you just want to head over and leave us a comment there. I like checking those out. All right, let's kick into the show. Moody Jones, welcome to the show.
What's up, Ari?
How you doing?
I'm doing good.
Good, good. So, yeah, we got the curls rocking here today. This is fantastic. Not too often do I get guests that with curls that rival mine, but yeah, it's nice. So tell me, for people that aren't familiar with Empire, I think it's a really interesting setup and kind of sets itself apart in the industry for kind of its independence and just all of its offerings and everything. You've been there a minute now. Just give us like an overview of what Empire is.
Sure. So Empire is an independent record label that started off over 10 years ago as a distributor, and then quickly started offering all the services that artists needed. The more we wanted to, become a better partner, the more we started transitioning and becoming a label. Yeah. And then today, we do everything from publishing to partnerships, to sync, to, admin, royalties, A&R, the whole gamut, anything an artist could want. And then we even have, the infrastructure from recording. We have studios here, New York, London. We have offices in Africa, in Europe, a few in America. So, whatever artists needs, international push and international experience and teams behind them to push their records today. And so we have to grow our teams accordingly.
That's great. And, it is over the last 10 years, I feel like distributors, like how Empire has evolved, are kind of, evolving into this more label direction or offering label services, moving that. And similarly, labels are moving, some of them are moving in the other direction, and everyone's kind of meeting somewhere in the middle where taking on label services, distribution. I mean, even the majors are offering deals these days that we're seeing that are reminiscent of strictly what indies used to offer. And we're seeing distributors offering advances, and everything is just so blurry right now. I'm curious, when you say it's independent, you mean it's not connected to any of the three majors, right?
No. So we've never taken on an investment. There's no stakeholders. It has a sole owner, which is Ghazi Shami, who is our CEO. All of this is, he's the brains behind everything. All of this is his vision, his image, which is why our head office is in San Francisco, because that was one of the main pillars for him, was bringing back the art and the culture back to the city, which is one of the reasons why I moved to San Francisco. And I think that's also one of our competitive advantages, is being a private company. There's a lot less yellow tape. There's a lot less bureaucracy. There's a lot less admin. Decisions get made faster. You make a very good point. The same reason all these majors are kind of a hybrid, and everyone's kind of offering the same deals or indie structures. They could do all of that, but they still have to answer to someone above. They still have to pass it up the chain until they get approval for certain things. Whereas for us, the market is moving so quick that we have to make sure that we're able to put the troops in the right places in order to get things moving quicker.
Cool. No, that's great. And so for the publishing part of the business, are you partnered with any indie publishers or administrators or anything like that, or is it all in-house?
It's all in-house. There's certain territories that we work with other companies to run the admin in, but that's I'm sure sooner or later, those territories will also become in-house.
Cool. That's great. So let's talk. I know you took over kind of the dance division, or started the dance division a couple years ago, 2-3 years ago. We had Darren Delgado from Dirty Bird Records on the show not too long ago. So the listeners are kind of familiar with Dirty Bird, and I know that you acquired Dirty Bird. Talk to me about kind of the dance division, the dance market right now. From my conversation, full transparency, this is not a scene that I am super familiar with. And I was, my biggest takeaway from the conversation I had with Darren was that the dance community, the dance industry is still selling downloads, which just blew my mind. I hadn't had I hadn't said the word digital download in probably 10 years. And we spent a lot of the time talking about it. So talk to me about what the dance music industry looks like these days now in 2024, and just kind of from your vantage point, what you're seeing.
The reason, I've been at Empire for 6 years. I just passed the 6 years mark. And, over my tenure over here, I used to be the senior vice president of digital and creative. So I oversaw all the marketing for most of our acts from hip hop, Latin, Nashville, African, Wana. And then I kind of like, you know, I wanted to do something a little different. And so I, you know, Ghazi actually was the one who was like, I think you should run your own division. What do you think about doing dance? And the biggest, I mean, the biggest difference in dance and everything else is honestly the consumer is just completely different. You know, where, you know, we just came back from Miami Music Week, which has also been going around for almost, I think, 25 years now. And it's only getting bigger and it's getting longer. But, you know, some of the shows were like $500 for a ticket. You know what I mean? Which is, and for acts that you wouldn't even imagine. And some of these acts, honestly, probably have like 80,000 monthly listeners. But they have fans that are willing to spend $500 to go see them, you know? And then it's, and even at the shows, it's very different. They're not very like merch oriented. Like people don't buy merch. There isn't even a merch. That's not something you usually do it at dance shows.
Wow.
It's more about inclusivity and community. And like the songs are a bit longer. The arrangements of records are different. And I think what happened after, after the vid, is basically people went from, you know, being stuck at home for a couple of years.
I haven't heard it referred to as the vid yet. I love that you're giving this this time period a shorthand. Okay, great. I'm with you now.
Yeah.
After the vid. Hit me.
After the vid. people, you know, were listening to music at home a lot more often. They were listening to a lot of genres. And then when they came out, the energy was just different. It was no longer about when we were sitting at home, we were more concerned about, you know, like their dating life, the artist's dating life and what they're saying and their opinions about things and if they're vaccinated or not. And then after all of this, we're like, you know what? I don't really care about the stuff anymore. I just care about the show. I just care about the performance. I just care about what I get in return. And so you started to see, you'll see that today more and more. There's more opinions coming out of people being unhappy at certain shows. And being disappointed and not feeling like the artist performed really well, or the set list was too short, or it was too expensive for what I got in return, things like that. And in the dance, I mean, like the shortest party I went to during Music Week was probably like 6 hours, and the longest party was 36 hours, you know?
Wow.
36 hours. Okay. Yeah. It's very different. And like, and like spending 36 hours, if you're able to, in the same venue, listening to like that night alone builds a community. And that night alone builds like a strong connection between a fan and an artist, which is almost like listening to someone's album, let's say 36 times. You know what I mean? In one night, I probably did that. You know what I mean? So it's very different. The bond you built, the connection you have, and then you'll come back over and over. You build that loyalty by just showing up and being there. And what's happening is like with the rise of Amapiano and a lot of dance music coming out of South Africa, Nigeria, and Ghana that we're importing over here, there it's coming here and then it's being reshaped and re-edited and coming back as like house music back to them. And so now we're having this like beautiful like cross genre, cross culture, melting point, dance floor, where that's very inclusive, which is what dance music has always been about, is inclusivity and acceptance. And so it's like very exciting. It's like a time where no one knows what's going to happen. But, and at the same time, people don't realize like dance music started off in Detroit, the same reason a lot of the Detroit rappers started, but you never see Detroit rappers and Detroit DJs working together because of, you know, as soon as Detroit blew up, like as soon as there was sort of like a civil war in Detroit, that led to them never actually working together and then like actually exiling the city. And now it's happening for the first time. Yeah, it's the same as like trap music. Trap music was when the hurricane hit New Orleans and people left New Orleans and moved to Atlanta and things like that. And that created trap music, which was like the start of like this hip hop dance community, you know? So a lot of times from trauma or from external factors, a new genre is born, and that genre is usually a more positive and more happy sounding to get over the current state of things.
Yeah, no, that's great. And that's really, really fascinating with the history and everything. But I'm curious about kind of the business model around all of this. When, you know, you're mentioning that a lot of these artists, they don't have a big streaming listenership. You know, I'm just going down some of like the largest artists, you know, on the roster. And it's just like, yeah, you said, you know, their listener numbers are negligible. I can't imagine that anyone can sustain on the revenue being generated from streaming in the dance realm, or at least, you know, these indie dance artists, especially as a dance label. Kind of where are you seeing the majority of the revenue coming from? Or are your deals structured in a different way that kind of, knowing that they make so much in the live space, that you're going to kind of cater more to the live community? Or how is that all, how does that work? And how is it different?
So it's a very good question. So usually the record labels have always operated on like the album record option model. And that's generally how things been. But because I was lucky enough to start this dance division, to me, it doesn't make sense, especially with up and coming acts. Like one of the first, you know, pieces of advice we always give an artist that's up and coming is like, there's no reason to rush an album. Like, build that story, build that narrative, get people interested, figure out your sound, figure out your creative direction. Then once you actually have something and people are asking for an album, then put it out.
Yeah.
And so if that's the case, then why am I going out to sign artists and then asking them for two albums? Like, that doesn't make sense. So instead we operate on single deals or song deals. And it could be, you know, 5 to 10. And then if it's cool, let's keep this relationship going. If not, then like no one wants to be in a relationship where one of us is unhappy or one of us is working more than the other, right?
Sure.
A toxic relationship. So so on the dance deals, we focus more on like songs, and like we try and deliver that every song is its own story and its own narrative, and essentially is an experiment to see if that's the one that matches with their expression. Mm-hmm. And the second thing is, one of the biggest differences as well is the way artists navigate and spend their budgets on the dance side compared to other genres is completely different. A lot of times when you're speaking to the artist on the dance side, that is also the composer, that is also the producer, that is also the vocalist sometimes, you know? So I'm actually speaking to the artist. I'm actually speaking to everyone involved in the project. So that's one. Two, in terms of a lot of these artists that, you know, they're not shooting music videos, they're not doing press photos, they're not like, that's not what they're doing. Their bread and butter is actually being behind the decks, or actually being at the show, or actually being outside, right? Mm-hmm, so they'd rather use that money to have a better show, to have better visuals, to have better special effects, to have a feature. So the way the budgets are spent are also very, very different. And a lot of times, you know, even if when we have deals going, majority of them don't even spend their budgets. Like, we'll beg them to spend. They're like, why? Like, I'm already in a positive place. I don't owe you shit. And I'm making money. And I was like, I'm totally. And it's when you're in that position as an artist that you're able to deliver your best work. Mm. You know what I'm saying? I'm not stressed. I'm not in the red. I can experiment even more. And that's the, and I'm happy with the support system that I had, you know?
Yeah, that's great. What's the, what are you looking for from the artists, in terms of like a return, or where's the majority of the revenue coming from? Is it from streams? Is it from record sales? Is it from downloads? Are you participating in the live space? Like when you bring on an artist, like how are you gauging success that like this signing has been a successful signing?
Very good question as well. So during our calls, before even a deal is drafted out, that's one of the very key questions that we ask is like, hey, what does success look to you as an artist, right? Mm-hmm. And it's important for both of us to understand what success looks like, so that we enter this relationship knowing what someone's bringing to the table and what my partner's bringing to the table, so that we're both going after that same finish line. Yes. Otherwise, like, you know, I think success is revenue and you think success is Instagram followers. And then you're upset because your revenue is up, but your followers are down, right?
Yep.
And then we're like, well, we spoke about this and we both agreed this is what success looked like.
Yes.
So for a lot of, for overall, the way our success is broken down is usually, it is first and foremost, definitely royalty revenue streams, downloads, vinyl sales, merch sales, ticket sales. Okay. And it could be whatever combination of those, you know, like I have dance artists that don't tour, that don't do shows.
Oh,
if you don't do tour and you don't do shows and you only put out music, then like, obviously we're both looking at revenue from streams as a success. Right. And if I'm not going to ask you to tour because we already agreed that wasn't something you're going to be doing.
Yep.
And it's different. And some artists I'll sign just because, you know, I'll listen to their music and I'm like, this belongs in a movie. Right. And I'm like, I can literally see the scene in my head, you know?
Cool.
And so maybe it's not even revenue stream. Sometimes it's just like putting it in the right scene so that it's appreciated.
Yep. Sick. In terms of, marketing, what are kind of the avenues these days that you're finding are the best ways to market dance music?
One of the best ways to market dance music today is getting it in the hands of other DJs to play it.
Mm.
To me, that because DJs are essentially our new curators, right? That's what radio always was. Radio has always been DJs playing records. So today, no one's listening to the radio, but everyone's listening to DJs at the club. Like we talked about people spending 36 hours in the club, right? That's a huge share of voice, right? If I can just get my song between all 400 songs you're going to play that night, you know, that's as good as it gets, my songs being heard. And then if it's heard, it gets associated with a moment. Like I'll never forget hearing that song for the first time when I was in Miami and sunrise was coming up and this guy was wearing this weird outfit. My curls looked amazing. And like, you know what I'm saying? Like something.
Yeah.
But that moment, to me, that's the best. And the way to do that is relationship building, right? It's having solid music and having relationships with artists. Like I'll personally text or WhatsApp. Most CJs are use WhatsApp. And I'd be like, hey, like, I feel like the song works in your set. And they're like, oh, totally, for sure. I'm like, cool. And like, I won't say anything else. And then they'll shoot me a video later on and be like, yeah, look, this song is actually fire. Look at the crowd react to this.
Sick. Yeah.
And a lot of times I even do that before signing a record.
To test it out, to see how the audience responds.
Absolutely. Yeah. 100%. Sometimes, you know, I have a folder that of all songs I'm not sure of. There are songs that are great, but there are songs that I can't see people listening to it at home, but I can see people listening to it in the car or as they're at a party.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, okay, I wonder how it would sound like at a party, and I'll send it to people and they'll send me the reaction. And sometimes like even the clear records, sometimes, you know, I'll remix a record and the artist is like, I don't like it. And sometimes it's because they don't understand it. Sometimes it's a different culture. Sometimes it's, and then I'll send them a video. I'm like, look, and they'll be like, oh, okay, this has to come out.
Yeah. 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 Sick. So it just kind of like help me understand, like complete the cycle for me of, so the record gets played by a DJ in a club. And how does that like dumb it down for me? How is that helping market the record? Do people in there hear it? You, like you said, they, you know, they remember this song. Are they like Shazamming it right there? Then do you see like an instant spike on Spotify or like people buying the record, downloading? I mean, like what happens next after they hear it in the club and like that's a success?
Cool. So let's take it from the point of view of different people at the club, right?
Okay.
So one, let's start from the people that are in front of the artist, in front of the DJ. So they hear it, like you said, they'll Shazam it. If they Shazam it, they don't find it, then they're going to take a video because they're like, oh, okay, I got to figure out how I'm going to find this record later. Right. And then while they're there, they might be like, you know what? I'm going to go home later and try and find this whole set so I can like take this part from the song and then try and find it myself, right?
Cool.
From the side that's next to the DJ, so that's the people that are like backstage, VIP, whatever, they see the crowd reaction. They're like, oh, I got to add this to my playlist, right? Oh, I got to add this, whatever. Then you have the video guy, the content people. They see how people are reacting. They're like, oh, you know what? When I cut up this video, I think that's the song I'm going to use because people really love the song, especially if the song's not out yet. Then it's like makes it even crazier that people want to watch my video.
Yeah.
Then, you know, like I did this with a record recently. The day it dropped, it had, I think, 40,000 Shazams the day it dropped, because the 3 months before that, it was never out, but it was still being registered. And so the day it dropped, it finally registered and I had 40,000. You know what I mean?
No shit. I didn't realize it did that. Yeah.
Yeah. And so having a number like that then looks really good to editors. Then it looks really good to artists. And you know what I'm saying? So then it helps build a crazy, like, it's like, what's better, like a pre-save or someone actually Shazamming your record before it's out? You know what I'm saying? Like, they actually heard it and said, yes, I want to remember this. They actually pre-saved it on Shazam. They should actually have that feature.
That's sick. No, that's a great feature. I didn't even realize that was happening, that it was essentially pre-saving it in the from Shazam. That's cool.
Yeah. And then like the artist now, and then now we have content for promo, right? Now I can use this content from the video for Instagram ads, for TikTok ads, for whatever. You know what I'm saying? I can run an ad and say the song everyone's been wanting, the song with 40,000 Shazams, is finally released. Mm-hmm. Like, all of this is just one DJ playing a record at a good party. That's, you know what I'm saying? And so the DJ is the real influencer. The DJ is the real curator. The DJ is the real person that, because, you know, we do all this marketing and we try and target the ideal demographic. But the ideal demographic is actually that guy behind the deck that's playing to the exact fans that you made the song for.
That's right. Real quick, I want to let you know about Too Lost. Too Lost is a new distribution company to the space. And let me tell you, I am very impressed with them. I got a full deep dive demo with the founder. And yeah, they're very innovative. And when you come into the distribution space at this stage with how crowded it is, you better be innovative. And they are. Yes, they will get your music out to Spotify, Apple Music, all the places, plus 450 other outlets around the world. They do not take a commission. This is why 300,000 artists and labels have already used them. They've already distributed 7 million songs. They offer payment splitting, and they don't charge your collaborators for this service for the payment splitting. They will just pay your collaborators directly for free. They have publishing administration with BMG, so you know it's legit. A lot of distributors have fallen into trouble with using some other less than legit pub admin services. Well, Too Lost is partnered with BMG. You know it's legit. They offer instant royalty advances. This is something that's very cool. And if you have historical streaming data and you need just a bulk payment up front, they can see how much your music has earned in the past. I'm like, all right, we think we know what you're going to earn in the next 3 years. Here's a check for $100,000 or whatever it will be. And you can just click a button and get that distributed and into your account immediately. They do lyrics and credits distribution for free. They have a very innovative analytics platform where, yes, you will see real-time analytics for Spotify, Apple Music, but also Pandora, Deezer, SoundCloud, and Peloton. They're the only ones that do Peloton. They also have a service where you can search the internet wherever your music is being used, and it will just show you a chart of everywhere, every TikTok video, everywhere, every YouTube video, everywhere your music is possibly being used. I've never seen this before. That was very cool. They'll register you with SoundExchange, and they have a fraud prevention tool, and they're doing fraud prevention. So if you're worried about your music, you know, getting a bot attack or something like that and getting ripped down, which we've seen is a big issue, they have fraud prevention tools that are better than most other distributors that I have seen. Check out Too Lost. You can just go to toolost.com, use the promo code Ari's Take for 3 months free and try them out. Let them know what you think. That's right. Does digital play in this at all? in terms of marketing?
Yeah, we for sure do a lot of TikTok ads, Instagram ads. We even do a lot of Snapchat ads because a lot of our music really moves in Africa, and Africa is really known for AudioMac ads. AudioMac is one of the most popular DSPs there, and so we do a lot of AudioMac ads. Cool. And then influencer campaigns, but we try and like the it's really funny. If you ever take the time and look at influencer posts for like hip hop music or pop music, and then look at the ones for dance music, you'll realize the difference in consumers, right? When you see a post on like Worldstar or rap or like one of the very big hip hop pages, people in the comments are on it. They're literally having full on conversations. They all have input. They all have whatever. You'll see that the comments are one of the highest engaging actions on a post. Mm. Okay. If you go look at a dance post, it's actually the send button that's the most used, because people just DM it to people, but no one really wants to comment or say anything negative or anything. They're just like, yo, have you seen this? That's it. So that tells you a lot about the consumer. They're like, they're not the ones to literally comment on things, but they're watching and they see what it is, and that's it.
Nice. With what's happening on TikTok right now with UMG kind of pulling everything, did that affect any of your recordings or any of your artists? Has that affected?
It only affects artists if they're publishing went through Universal, which wasn't a large percentage for us. We from the get-go, Empire has always been like, put it up everywhere, anyone can have it, we don't care. Like, you know, we come from the distribution mindset. The more people have access to it, the better. So like we would never like, it's not something we would pursue for us. We want people to be able to have to go on Spotify and Apple and not need a credit card to listen to music, you know. Like, we're not trying to add more layers to separate the fan from the list, from the artist. So to us, we didn't have much of a negative impact. And you know, we'll see how this ends up.
For aspiring producers, DJs, artists in the dance community, what do you tell them when they are, you know, might have, they're like a bedroom producer or something, and they have, you know, some great tracks, maybe great remixes, but they don't really know the next steps? Like, what's your advice to them?
Is this a producer who doesn't play any shows? This is just starting early on.
They're starting early on. They're kind of the bedroom producer. They might have, you know, a SoundCloud channel or something like that, and they're just kind of releasing their music there, and might be doing remixes and stuff like that. But yeah, maybe they'd be open to it, but they just don't know what to do next.
I think the first thing I would advise them to do is figure out, like what you and I talked about earlier, Ari, is, hey, bedroom producer, figure out what success is to you. It's no longer a unilateral direction to success, you know. There's and a lot of labels are starting to realize that some artists just want to be a one-hit wonder, and there's nothing wrong with that. Some artists just want to tour and never want to put out new music again, and that's fine, you know. So figure out what you want to do. Are you a bedroom DJ who just wants to start building on early retirement, so I'm going to put out 10 songs that make me $1,000 a month and then I can retire? You know what I mean? Like, there's nothing wrong with that. That's a great retirement plan. You know, so decide what it is you want to do. It doesn't, you know, I see so many people go through so many you know, mental issues and physical issues and have a lot of sacrifices to make with their families just because they take on shows for no money, or spend all their money on so many things that don't really move the needle. And I don't know if you really stop and think, do I actually want this, or is this just what I'm supposed to do as an artist? You know what I mean? Like, and my second piece of advice is, art isn't just in the music. Art is in everything you do. Like, you should get used to being alone. Art should be in the way you market. in the way you write your name, in the way you post. Like when you see people post cool content and you like it, you should aspire to be like that and have content like that. Yep. Most of us like artists, not because of their music anymore. It's because of what they stand for.
Yes.
And the reason they stand for something is because they stand for something different than what everyone else is saying.
Mm.
So, you know, it's easy to, it's just decide what kind of artist you are.
That's great. Really well put. You know, some people call that kind of branding, more on the marketing side, more of the cold hearted marketing people call that branding, but I like how you put it, is that art is in everything that you do. Yeah, that's really well put in. And we do see that it's, you know, fans aren't following artists because of they like one song. They might follow a playlist because they like the songs on there, but they're gonna really follow an artist for life because of what that artist stands for, who they are, everything that's about them. It just makes sense because everything is filtered through them, the artist, from what they post, of course, and the music that they make, but just how they look at the world. And you see that that is represented in everything they do when they're performing, you know, on their socials, all of that. So yeah, that's really well put. When you bring on a new artist, and you might think let's say you think the music is brilliant, but they don't quite have a handle on everything else. You know, the branding, I guess, isn't quite in line, or maybe they don't know how to connect it all together. And you think they're a brilliant artist, but that's not being adequately represented publicly yet. Mm-hmm. What are your next steps? Kind of how do you work with that artist?
Honestly, those happen often, and I'm sure a lot of label execs have similar experiences. But, you know, luckily we're in a position where our roster is very diverse and our roster is extensive, and we have artists from everywhere, all walks of life. At my current position, it really is that someone I want to have a relationship with? You know what I'm saying? Like literally characters, you know, because you can have the best music in the world, but like you and I just don't get along. We just don't speak the same language. You know what I mean? We don't speak the same language. We don't have the same, like I have, like some artists are so on it and they'll email me and they'll be like, they email me, they send me breakdowns, they'll send me stats, they'll send me data, they'll tell me, you know what I'm saying? And I'm like they're on it. You got to want it more than I do, right? Like I'm support. I'm not the main act. My name is not the one written. I'm not the primary artist. You are. My job is support. But if I want it more than you, it's not going to work. Mm-hmm. So it's the opposite. Sometimes your music is not that great, but you want it so bad. And I'm like, okay, let's do it. Like, let's figure it out. You know what I mean? Because I'm not worried about your work ethic. I'm not worried about your core values. I'm not worried about your determination. I'm not worried about your ambition, right? These should be basics that like every artist should have figured out. You know what I mean? And if that's figured out, then like the music, the creative part will figure out together.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. So for the artists that are listening to this and are feel fully aligned and like, you know what, you know, Moody's my guy, Empire is my label. How do I get to Moody? How do I get to Empire? How do I build this partnership? What do you say to them?
I mean, if you know anyone in the building, hit them up. If you want to hit me directly, you can like every other day. From 11 to 12, just so everyone knows, from 11 to 12, I have an hour of listening to demos. And sometimes I'll even time my flight so that on the flight, I will listen to those demos from 11 to 12. But
cool.
I listen to every single thing. But even after I like it, I will pass it by my team and I make sure that everyone's heard it as well and everyone agrees, because I want everyone on this team to be waving your flag, not just me. I want, you know, we work in music, you know, we're so lucky. and so the last thing you want to do is be in music and have your dream job and work at a dream company, but then work on a project you don't really love. You know what I mean? Like that's a sad ending. So, you know, I'm like, let's all listen to it. Do you guys feel it? Do you guys agree? And, you know, as long as more than half the team is like, no, I totally get it, I totally see it, then cool. But it would never be like, hey guys, I don't care, I like this artist, we're signing him. Because honestly, I respect everyone too much to do that. And I respect the artist too much to put him in that position.
Sure, that's great. How often are you kind of getting out to shows these days and getting in the club and doing these all night parties?
Every day.
Really? You're in it. You're in it.
I'm in
it.
That's great. I'm in it. I'm in it. Like, and honestly, like, you could listen to the song and you're not going to understand it, but you go to the show and you're like, what the hell is this? Mm. You know? And that's a big part of signing artists too. Like, I like going to a show and seeing how the artist talks to staff, how the artist talks to girls, guys, how the artist like responds, you know, are they shy? Are they out? Like, I love knowing these things. Sometimes like on a call, it'd be like the shyest person ever. And you see them at a show and you're like, wow, like that energy. And then I understand the artist. Like all day you're charging, all day you're doing, you have this shell so that when you explode, it really makes it, you know what I mean? And so you got to be outside.
Yeah, that's sick. No, it's great to hear that you're still in it, because you know there are a lot of execs that kind of they've been in it, they get a little jaded, they're phoning it in, and I appreciate that you said that we're lucky to do what we do in the music industry, and I think that's a important reminder for everybody working in the industry is just, we're lucky to be here, and if you don't like what you're doing, then it might be time to find a different career path.
And going back to what you're saying, like maybe it's time we change the term bedroom DJ. You know what I'm saying? Like maybe you should be, maybe you should be a going outside DJ, because I promise you, it's so much easier for you if you go outside. Like if you're way outside, you meet the people. And I get you know, people get to know you, and then you're like, here, check out my music. But if you're sitting in your at home and doing it, it's completely different.
Yeah, definitely. Have you discovered artists in the club that you've then reached out to? Is that a thing that kind of is part of your work for?
That's part of my job, is going out and discovering artists at clubs. Sometimes honestly, it's the artists that are behind the artist. Like sometimes just being behind being in the booth with an artist, and someone will be like, oh, I used to produce with him, or, oh, we share a studio together. Oh, and like the fact that he brought you with him or she brought you with him means that you guys are a crew, and cool. They might be signed and they might be with like a major, but this person is, you know, just doing the same amount of work. He's literally at the same party, spending the same amount of time, probably can play the same music. So maybe let me listen to what they've got.
But
I also DM artists a lot. I DM artists a lot.
Oh yeah?
Cool. A lot. I DM artists a lot. Like if I hear a song and I'm like, this is different, I'll like do my like check out their, read their bio, go on their Instagram, see who my friends follows them. Check out their first post and their last post, and then be like, yo, this is a good song. And literally it'll just be like, yo, this is a good song, you should stay in this lane, I won't say anything else. And then like if they want to continue the convo, they will. But you know,
that's great. In terms of like release frequency in the dance world, and how you release, I know you said that we kind of operate in like a singles world these days, just across the industry, and that you're kind of focusing on that. Is it something that you recommend your artists get on this like releasing schedule of, you know, a single a month or a single every 3 months or something like that? Is there a routine that you kind of recommend, or is it just kind of when inspiration hits? Or is it something like, you know, work as long as you need to work to get the one perfect track, and if that's one a year, we'll live with that. Like, talk to me about just kind of what are the expectations and just what are the recommendations these days?
So most of the time, it really every artist, producer in the studio has their own kind of formula of how things work. Everyone, like I know artists who will go spend a month, record 100 songs, and then spend the next few months playing out the records or just listening to them over and over, and then being like, okay, 10 out of those 100, and throw the other 90 away. That's one person's formula. I have someone else who starts literally January 2nd will be like, yo, these are the next 8 songs for the whole year. You decide how you want to put them out, right? Everyone does something different. I when I go to the studio, I literally put a stopwatch or a timer, and I'm like, I have to, here's my idea, and I'm going to finish this in the next 90 minutes. I don't care what happens. It's just done in 90 minutes. I don't want to overthink it. I don't want to, but that's, everyone has their own formula. In terms of frequency for DSPs, I don't think there's a right or wrong, man. But what I do think artists should start thinking about doing is removing songs. I think people forget.
Songs?
Yeah.
What do
think
you
about it like this. Think about it like this, right?
Okay.
All these CSPs have an algorithm, right? But the one of the biggest parameters in an algorithm is your recency, like your last release record, right? And so a lot of times artists will see their monthly listeners go down or like whatever go down. And it's because people were listening to your stuff and then you drop 2 more records, but those records weren't as good. And then they stop listening to that first record. And now they're downplaying those records. So now your ranking is going down. But if you have, if you delete the last 2 records, your ranking might go back up. You know what I mean? People, it's like, think about it, it's like your Instagram. Like DSPs are essentially social networks right now. It's like content and they want frequency and they want, what do you do on Instagram? You archive stuff that's not good.
Yeah. Wait, so... I mean, that's fascinating because you'd think that there's these loyal listeners to some of your old stuff and that if you remove the old records, the listenership would actually go down because now those songs get removed from playlists. Those listeners aren't going to be hearing those as much.
You look at your artist profile, right? And you can tell, like, for example, sometimes I'll see like someone's similar artist exactly the same. I'm like, yeah, all these similar artists make sure. They drop a record or two. Those records go in a random playlist. Someone in a random country starts playing it, and then all of a sudden their related artists are so random. It's no longer the artists that were actually similar. And so now they're in a lane that's completely different than what they worked their whole life for. You know, so I mean, no one's gonna do that to their biggest streaming records. But if you know that if record isn't as good, you should just remove it. You know what I'm saying? Like just get rid of it. And like if I went to someone's Spotify and I only saw 3 songs and they were all big numbers versus I went and saw 15 songs. 2 of them have big numbers and those came out 3 years ago. Everything after is low. What does that say? That artist is not in a decline, right? And you make a good point. Loyal fans that say, hey, what happened to that record?
Right.
Awesome. Great. That fan is going to message you if they are and be like, yeah, here you go. They're like, damn, I love this artist. He took the song down and gave it to me. Like now you have a direct, you know what I'm saying? It's like buying vinyl. Like it's, you can't even get the song anymore on DSPs, but I have it and I got it from the artist. Right.
Yeah.
Like if you have loyal fans then
you can have it
on Bandcamp.
That's a good point. I mean, that's really interesting because it's like, you know, it's almost the opposite of windowing, where you hold off from putting a song on streaming service, a new one, and you ask people to buy it first, and then you put it on streaming services later. You're kind of saying, you know, maybe the underperforming songs or the old records, you remove it from streaming services. So I'm curious about your perspective of moving forward. I mean, is that a strategy that not just for like vanity metrics of just it doesn't look as good or maybe how people looking at it, but like is there something to withholding songs, records from streaming services and only having it available for downloads or physical?
In the dance scene there is for sure, especially in the dance scene, because a lot of records don't necessarily have, and this is, I'm speaking across the globe, a lot of records are unofficial remixes, uncleared samples, you know what I'm saying? And like they can't, if they blow up they get taken down, you know what I'm saying? So all these records need a place to live besides the club, because they are getting played in the club, they are getting heard and they are getting Shazam, but they're not on DSP. So maybe it comes up and then you remove it The I think the important thing here is like all the artists have the same access to the same tools, right? But it's how we use these tools differently. That's how you create the art. Like that's what we're talking about. Everything you do should be art. So if I'm looking at my own profile, I'm like, those three songs don't represent me at all. And like, I don't even play them. And I actually get pissed when people ask me, cause I'm like, that's not my vibe anymore. Why archive them? Yeah. Like, I think it adds more to me being an artist.
Yeah, no, that's cool. I mean, you're curating your art and it's like your own, your Spotify profile is your own art gallery. That's your personal gallery and you're curating that. So it makes a lot of sense.
Keep in mind, Spotify has discovery mode, right? In discovery mode, every time you add, like the more records are in discovery mode, the more art fans are being exposed to stuff, even though they don't really want to listen to it, but they're like, hey, this is what's next. Now, what's next? Mm-hmm. Should it be one of my songs that I know isn't my favorite or isn't the one that is connecting to most of my audience? Or should it just be the ones that I know are good?
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a good point. Yeah. Really interesting. Cool. Well, Moody, this has been so fascinating. I know you dropped so many gems and everybody listening, I know is super appreciative of your wisdom and transparency with all of this. I have one final question that I ask everyone who comes on the show, and that is, what does it mean to you to make it in the new music business?
From an executive standpoint or from an artist standpoint?
Either one. You take it how you want.
Artist standpoint, I think it's when people take art and redo it in their own way. So whenever I see people make remixes on their own or acoustic version, like by themselves, not paid from an influencer, I'm like, that is the biggest compliment. Like someone loves my song so much that they wanted to hear it in a different way. I love that. I think that's cool. That's the biggest compliment as an artist. And as an executive, it's honestly not just on a royalty or revenue or any of that. It's really like everyone around me improving, like just pushing the average of everyone around me. And I think that's it, whether it's on mental health or physical health or in ear health, like whatever it is, just pushing everyone around me to do things differently and like forget the status quo, like break every rule, you know, and the more conversations we have like this, the more we're like, why does this rule exist?
Yeah.
You know,
love it. But, love it. Moody Jones. That was great. Thank you so much.
Appreciate Art.
Today's episode was edited by Ari Davids with music by Brassroots District and produced by all the great people at Ari's Take. This episode is brought to you by DistroKid. DistroKid is a distribution service that can get your music into all the DSPs like Spotify, Apple Music, TikTok, Tidal, Instagram. Over a million artists have used DistroKid. I'm one of those artists. I've used DistroKid to get my music out, distribute some of my songs. As you know, as I look into all of these distribution services, I test them out. And DistroKid is great. They offer a ton of features, annual fee, unlimited uploads, and you keep 100% of your royalties. Check out DistroKid.com.